Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Tour de Peace is in Ann Arbor, Michigan today, and we're heading for Detroit tomorrow. So we are really zooming along on our ride. We're about over two-thirds done, and it's just really amazing the wonderful support we're getting. My guest today on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox is a good friend of mine, Diane Wilson. Diane is a fourth-generation fisherman on the Gulf of Mexico in Texas. She's a committed environmentalist. She's one of the founders of Code Pink Women for Peace. She sat with me in the ditch in Crawford, Texas, the first night on August 6th, 2005, and she is a person who really puts her body and her entire self on the line to make the world a better place. My dear friend, Diane Wilson, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. It's good to be here, and it's good seeing you again. Or hearing you.
Well, certainly, we just saw each other in Dallas for the Bush Library protest, which was awesome to connect with you personally in person again. And I would like to extend my condolences for the passing of your sister. I understand you recently lost your sister.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So to love to you and your family.
Well,
and also, Diane Wilson, as I explained in my introduction, has been a lifelong activist, environmentalist, just an amazing kick-ass person. But Diane also spent the first night with me in Crawford, Texas August 6, 2005. And
that's
there were just seven of us. And to me, that is a night that I'll never forget. I'll never forget that night, the first night when we were just sitting in the camp chairs under the stars, and just amazed of all the messages of solidarity we were getting from all over the world. And, you know, I'm so glad that I shared it with such a special person as you.
Well, thank you, Cindy. That time will still probably be a highlight. I have never in my life saw anything that grew like that. It's still unbelievable. I still have a hard time when I tell people how it grew from just a few people in a grassy ditch. I mean, literally a ditch, and could grow into thousands within a week. I just shake my head every time I think about it. It was an amazing time. Yes.
It was pretty amazing. So the reason I wanted to have you on the show, and, you know, I've had this show now for 5 years, and it's about time I had you on anyway, but you have recently been fasting in solidarity with the Guantanamo prisoners who are fasting, and you and I did a fast together, too. I think it was in 06. We called it the Troop Home Fast. So you're a faster, but tell us about your experience fasting in solidarity, and also about the status of the Guantanamo prisoners who are fasting.
Well, at this point, I'm on day 37 of water-only hunger fast, and I believe at this time there are several other, Elliot, who is with the, and you'll have, excuse me, because one thing about the hunger strike is my brain gets real fuzzy, and I forget things. So you have to forgive me when I say Elliot, who is, I believe he's the former president of Vets for Peace.
Elliot Adams?
Yes, thank you. He is also on the long-term hunger fast, and also Brian Wilson, who was, believe it or not, recently ran over by a SUV when he was going to his vigil. And so he's also on the hunger fast, and this is, like I said, day 37 for me. It's a water only, and I am and actually I heard about the extent of what was going on in Guantanamo at the Bush Library demonstration. I think Medea had come from London, and there was a group over there that had been trying to get the British citizen who has been detained over there over 11 years, trying to get him back. And so that was where they had decided, because all of the majority of the men, matter of fact, I believe last count there were 137 men who were on the hunger strike, and there is 166 men over there. So a very large majority are on the hunger strike. I think if you listen to what the administration says or what the Pentagon says, they are always lasping behind what is coming out from the attorneys who are keeping track on who's doing the hunger strike. And I believe at this point there are over 30 that are being force-fed. I believe the U.S. government, they have sent over 100 medical teams to do the force feeding, because what they're trying to do is, because it's been, I believe right now it's probably over 120 days that they have been on the hunger fast. So these men are on the verge of dying, and they do not, the government, this will not look cool for these men who have been, and people don't understand, they have been cleared by the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, you name it, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, totally cleared, and yet they remain. And so all of these men who are not guilty, there's no reason to be there, they are now on a desperate last stand, and they could easily die. I believe there are 7 that are hospitalized, and they say not critical, but like I said, information that reluctantly comes out of the White House is always, and our comes out of the Southern Command is always two or three steps behind what is actually going on. So it is critical, and it has become, it has turned very brutal. I believe with the new, there was a new command that came over, and it became very brutal. They started putting the men in solitary confinement. And they started taking away all of their, like, their books. They would take legal papers from their lawyers. They would, and sometimes, often, they wouldn't even allow them a map. And I guarantee you, I'm sure, Cindy, you have been in cells before, and you know how cold it can be when everything is all metal, and you, and some of these men have lost 30 and 40 pounds, and where you have it, where it's nearly 50 degrees in there, you are freezing, and these men say they feel like they're losing their mind. They feel like they're an old car that is falling to pieces, and I just, it has been going on for a long time, and there has been, like, witness against torture. There have been a lot of groups that have been consistently opposing this, and I was always aware of it, but I never really actually sit down and started really getting into it, and it made me ashamed. It made me ashamed to be an American, because this is not. Not at all, and I, you know, I've been around the activist block a little bit, and I know to make changes, I mean, you can't just write a little pretty letter to the to the White House or your congressman mm-hmm. and say, oh, pretty please, why don't you do the right thing and send these men home? No, you have to get in their faces. You know, it's like the corporations and the environmental. You have to literally get in their faces so they will not forget you. And
well, you were doing this fast in front of the White House, and didn't you chain yourself to the White House fence while you were doing it?
I did. With a bicycle lock or something? German. If you're going to try it, go the German route, because I know they were pretty hacked off too, because I had, at the end, I think I had 35 policemen, I had a SWAT uh-huh. team, a rescue team, an ambulance, and there was another one, I can't remember what it was, but they were just trying to figure out how to get that lock off, and all of these cops would come up and they would look at that lock and they'd say, German, and they would just walk off, totally disgusted, and it uh-huh. took about 2 hours, and I think they were, I heard later, because Medea said, one of the Secret Service said they were really frightened about it, because the lock was very, very good. It was very hard, and it was real tight around my neck. And they were afraid if you start cutting into it, maybe take a little niche out of my throat there. So I think they were real worried. So they had drenched me in water and put a fire retardant around me, and they grinded it off. And believe it or not, all of that, 2 hours, all of that, they said they was going to charge me federal offenses. I got threatened with all kinds of stuff. And but actually, all I got was they said I was protesting without a permit, and I was only in for 4 hours. That's the least I have ever been in jail. And I was like,
right. Well, you said I've been in jail, and I have, but the most I've ever been in jail was 53 hours. You've spent some significant time in prison. These Guantanamo, these men in Guantanamo have been there for 12, 13 years.
Yes.
Can you imagine the hope they felt when that liar Obama came in and said he was going to close Guantanamo? Now they're talking about spending $150 million to overhaul it and expand it. Being in prison for that long with no hope of, you didn't do anything, and it's been proven you didn't do anything. You're still in prison with no hope of getting out. You know, I can imagine that some of them are thinking that dying would be better than what they had to go through.
Well, actually, that's what they said. They said that was the only way they were getting home, is in a casket. And matter of fact, the last one that left, he left in a casket.
Oh.
And I've fought chemical plants down here on this Texas Gulf Coast, and everybody kind of knows the, I think it's widely known, the politics down here in Texas. And, I mean, you really have to think outside the box to get things done. So I know the desperation you do when you do a hunger strike. It's not the first thing you resort to. It's like the last thing you resort to. And, I've been in jail just long enough to know, and 11 years, it blows my mind. I don't know how they have kept sane. I really, really don't. And it is, especially to have hope after hope dashed.
Uh-huh.
Obama talks and he talks and he talks.
And he lies and he lies and he lies, just like every other president before him.
Yeah.
You know what gets me is there's a big movement in our movement to free Bradley Manning, and that's good. We should have one. Bradley has been in military prison for several years. He was under horrific conditions. I don't think as horrific as the people in Guantanamo or Bagram or the other prisons. And You know, and there is awareness and a movement against Guantanamo, but you know, here we are. You said that you were deeply ashamed of being American, and you know, something like this is something that 300 million Americans should be ashamed of, and 300
Yes.
million Americans should be calling for it to close and for the release of those prisoners. I've been down to Guantanamo, and you know, I've always been very outspoken about that. But you know, it seems like one American soldier gets treated that way, and there's a big movement when hundreds of innocent Muslims have been, maybe even thousands with all the prisons we have all over the world, not just Guantanamo. Yeah, and it just, there's people like you, and there's people like the Center for Constitutional Rights and World Can't Wait and Witness Against Torture, like you said. But to me, this should be a mass movement against the stain.
But you know what? I think a lot of it is, and I put it directly on the president because he has the ability to tell the truth. And, you know, even that last speech where Medea kind of interrupted him, I was listening very, very closely to every word he said. And and what got me was he was talking about the prisoners, and he was saying that the majority of those guys in Guantanamo were caught on the battlefield. I mean, his own task force, the one he appointed with Congress people, with military, with FBI, they investigated the whole thing, and they said like 4% were ever on the battlefield, and these men were purchased. They were purchased by the U.S. government. Yeah, and the thing that he is, you know, he didn't tell that. No, he says the majority were on the battlefield, and so what do? And that puts it in people's mind. These are terrorists, and then, you know, even down here in Texas, you know, even my sister, you know, I reluctantly tell them what I'm doing because they do not like it. And when I was telling her, I was down here, I was on hunger strike to close Guantanamo, she said, well, I think it should stay open. They're all terrorists. And it's like,
right?
They're not terrorists. They're not. Uh-huh. And but the thing it is, when you got the president, I mean, he can do a press conference whenever he wants to.
And to keep
reinforcing that this is they are terrorists is a lie, and I'm just like, why? You know, this is one reason why people do not stand up, because they're told lies and they believe it and they don't search any further than their own nose.
Well, then there's people, you know, like your sister, who say they're terrorists, and then there's the Democratic Obama supporters who say stuff like he really wants to close up, but the Republicans won't let him.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
You know,
big,
it's really very bad.
Shoot, I remember when we were doing the troops on fast, and we were talking to some Democrats, and they said, "Well, we can't do something. We got to wait till we get into the majority." And it's like,
right,
my God,
right.
You know, now what?
Then they were in the majority, and why wasn't Guantanamo closed in the first 2 years of the Obama administration?
Yeah.
You know, so that's just a ridiculous excuse.
Yeah.
I do also want to talk about your involvement in there's a really great struggle against the tar sands in Texas, and that also needs to have more exposure and solidarity. So can you tell about your involvement and what's happening with that struggle?
Like I said, I'm born and raised on the Texas Gulf Coast, fourth generation fisherman. My family has been in this little fishing town in this one spot for 120 years. So that gives you a sense of how long that I've been here, and there's a lot of battles down here. I mean, we fight for our lives down here. from the oil and chemical companies down here. But and I know, and this is Texas, and it really is. They do things real. They can do them real brutal. And when I heard about this group of young people that were living in the trees and around Dallas and I think Winesboro, and then they were on Nacogdoches, and they were literally living in the trees, and they were blocking that pipeline and going directly confronting it, you know, other than this lobby, 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 and let's have a lobbying day, and let's go talk to
right.
a congressman.
Let's sign petitions and all that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, let's sign a petition, and let's write a letter, and let's... Anyway, I couldn't believe it was happening in Texas, and it was just the boldness, just, it thrilled me, so I tracked them down. I went all the way to... I got in my old truck and I tracked them down, and they were out in the woods in Nacogdoches, and we sat around a circle, and I said, I wanted to help, and I thought yeah. where I could be of help is I can do a hunger strike. For some reason I got a knack for it, and I said, there are these companies. Because, you know, there's a pipeline, but there are corporations, there are these refineries that are placing all of their cards on the table and say, we want the tar sands, we'll process it, we'll back you, we'll support you, we'll, matter of fact, they were over in California, Valero was over in California trying to kill some bills over there to, you know, to make sure everything goes just real perky down here, And I said, focus on the corporation, focus on the refinery, do a hunger strike in front of the refinery. And it wasn't the trees, I said, but, you know, you could do it around the refineries. And so we did. I went and I'm getting real good about chaining myself, and I learned a thing or two about bicycle locks, and I'd actually chained myself to one of their trucks down there. And matter of fact, there was another guy down here, his name was Bobby Lindsay, and he chained himself to a moving truck. And that's the only way they would stop him, because the truck driver didn't want to stop, and he was going to drag him. One of the activists really literally laid in front of his tire, and that was the only way he stopped, because he had run over the woman. So then they naturally we got thrown in jail in Harris County Jail, which is a wicked, wicked place, I guarantee you. And so that's where we started Hunger Fasted. And so I've been in real solidarity with these groups, and it's predominantly young people. I was amazed. And the thing that is, are you still there?
I'm still here, yes.
Oh,
yes,
okay, because I sorry,
yeah.
My phone was going out. Uh-huh. But the you know, it's I worry about what worries me now is the seemingly splintering of this fight. I think people look at, even Obama, you know, he's like, well, we'll rethink the northern part, but southern, just forget that. And a lot of people, a lot of activists was like, well, forget Texas. I mean, that's done. I mean, even one time I had deep green resistance down here, and they're pretty hardcore. And they take a look at the Houston Ship Channel, and they're like, let's find a different spot, you know. So I think it really is like the belly of the beast. This is where the corporations are. This is their headquarters. This is where they plot and scheme and make their deals, and they do not want nothing to change. And that's why all of these activists, I guarantee you, they were filing federal charges against them. I mean, sticking your hand in a PVC pipe, federal charges. And and so it was, they can be real hardcore, but to see these young people, the boldness, the I was, it gave me hope. And a lot of times in Texas, it's hard to find that end of the tunnel. It really is.
For sure. So you've been in trouble in Texas before. So what happened when you got arrested chaining yourself to the truck?
I'll tell you a little bit of the differences is like when I chained myself to the White House, I was in jail for 4 hours and got charged with a protest without permit. When I did the very same thing in Texas around the Houston Ship Channel, I was thrown in jail for 5 days, and then I was charged with a trespass. And I tell you what, my last trespass charge, I got 6 months in jail, in a county jail.
Uh-huh.
I sit 6 months and a $2,000 fine for trespass. And so they are, and like I said, a lot of them, there were these Occupy from Austin, they sit and just partially blocked a harbor road. I mean, trucks were going around. They weren't stopping them. So it was almost a symbolic, but they had their hands in PVC pipe, and they were all given federal charges. It took like almost a year and a half, 2 years to finally, to make a break in the case. And the only reason why they made a break in the case, come to find out, it was half of the, I mean, there's about 10 Austin cops that had integrated into the Occupy and were coaching them how to make this stuff for which they charged them, federal charges. It was the Austin cops. I mean, talk about peculiar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's strange.
Yeah.
It's strange.
I'm here in Michigan today, and Michigan, they're trying to get a law to ban horizontal fracking here in Michigan. And Kalamazoo just had a pipeline fracture, as they've been happening all over the country. And I think it's organizations like, you know, the establishment environmental organizations that, like, say, tell Obama, you know, we really want you to not approve the tar sands project, but if you do, we'll still vote for you, or if you do, we'll still support you. But it's people like you that, you know, really put your body on the line for our planet and for life on this planet that are so inspiring. And the young people, you know, everywhere who are fighting against fracking, against the pipeline, against Monsanto, and I think that is, because they're really hardcore. They're not the people who are going to say, let's stay on the sidewalk, let's color in the lines, you know, let's make sure our protests are polite, because as you pointed out, what we're fighting against certainly isn't polite.
That's right. I guarantee it isn't. And the thing that is I know, like a lot of the larger groups with, and I do, I think they get a lot of the funding, they get the majority of the publicity, and they are sitting on the bargaining table. You know, I remember recently reading where it was one, I don't know whether it was the Washington Post or one of them, and it was an editorial about, well, if probably Obama is going to approve this, but let's hope that because she knows that there will be environmentalists mad at him, that maybe he will do something good about climate change. And it's like, they're already negotiating. And the thing that is, it's like, they're up there, and, you know, a lot of these activists, it's usually, you know, I hate to start getting another subject here, but it's very white, very middle class, and the sacrifice zones are these Latino communities, these Black communities, these cancer alleys. I mean, we are the sacrifice zone, and it's like, okay, we're gonna play nice and be on the bargaining table, so we get to sit around and, you know, and then, matter of fact, and they get perturbed. They get really perturbed when groups like Tarkin's Blockade are literally going after the pipeline or going after the corporation. They get a trifle perturbed, and it's like, this is not the message we want to stay. We want to keep on target with this message, and pretty please, you know, like even the Sierra Club, you know, like we're going to do an action for civil disobedience, and we're going to go do a photo op in front of the White House fence and get a $100 fine. Mm-hmm. And they call that radical. I was like,
right, exactly.
What?
Yeah.
What's going on here? That is not radical.
Right. Oh, gosh, I was thinking of... Oh, when we were in Dallas, for example, you know, protesting with you against the Bush Library, and everybody there, good friends, good solid activists, but the cops blocked both ends of the street for us, and we thought, well, you know, we should be marching in the street, not the sidewalk. And so several of us went out in the street. We were hoping everybody else would go out in the street with us. And we had actually the activists yelling at us, the activists.
Yelling at us to get back on the sidewalk.
We promised the police we wouldn't go in the street. I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
you know, let's protest in the lines, and that'll change things.
I know, because I know when that time I chained myself to that truck at the in front of Valero. In front of the Houston Ship Channel, the minute we got arrested in a paddy wagon, and then they pull off from this little alley and pull you out, and there was Homeland Security. And it's like, I mean, I guarantee you, when Homeland Security talks to you, they're very, very friendly. All just friendly as they can be, and they got a little handbook, and they just want to know who's in control, because we want to talk to them and show them what they can legally do and what they legally can't do. So
right.
It'll be a real happy little protest. And
and
it's like, please give us the names. Please give us the names. So it's like Homeland Security. And they interrogated us over an hour in that alley.
It's so fascist using the force of the police state to protect.
Yeah. It is. I guarantee you, when we were down there at Valero, the cops were riding around in the security trucks of the plant of Valero.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. That's what happened here. There's also a big anti-nuke struggle. There's a nuclear power plant that the people want closed. And they said that the guy from the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Committee, came to, I think it was Kalamazoo or something, to have a meeting with the community, and he was riding around with the people from the plant, going out to dinner with the people from the plant.
Oh, I know it.
You know?
I know it.
So it's like, how? You know?
I know it.
Start doing something like, unless we all are inspired by your and others' actions, and God, you know, it's just almost hopeless.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is there's so much fear, and I think that's what the government, the forces that be, that's what they want. They want us constantly to be in fear of attack, of this or that, and to also be in fear that you do anything. You know, because I remember one time, the first time I actually, I climbed the White House fence, and it was back, I think, before the invasion of Iraq, and what we was going to do is we were going to climb up there and hang a banner, and there was supposed to be some Congress people, so we just envisioned the Congress people passing under our banner, but I managed to get up and over and on top of those big pillars in front of the guard station. And I remember there was actually a couple of guys that wanted to do that too, but they were like, oh no, we're going to be shot. They're going to shoot us. They're going to shoot us. And the thing is people really, I mean, the hardcore activists, they are afraid they're going to be shot. They're afraid they're going to disappear. And I think the powers that be, they like perpetuating that. It makes people very afraid. And you just,
well, Diane, and you know what really pisses them off are people like you and I that aren't afraid of them.
Oh, yeah,
really pisses them off.
It makes you free. I have never
absolutely
felt so free in my life. That's the irony of it. Yes. I agree.
Absolutely. Well, Diane, we have run out of time, and it was really nice talking to you. And like I said, you're such an inspiration, and I hope more people that listen to this and know your story can also be inspired to, you know, step outside the lines. You don't have to climb up on the White House fence or chain yourself or something to do more, effective activism.
Yeah.
And but you know, it could be in stages too. And
yes, it was.
So the more you do, the more you realize that the more you can do.
Yeah.
So Diane, I love you so much, and thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox today.
I just wanted to say that I'm always looking for that golden moment that things mushroom like they did in those ditches in Crawford. That's always pure magic. I will never forget it, and I am very very touched that you allowed me on. Thank you very much, Cindy.
Well, you take care of yourself, and like I said, love to you and your family, and a shout-out to definitely Brian Wilson and Elliot Adams, too, who are heroes, and as well as you. So thank you so much, Diane, and hope to talk to you sooner.
Okie doke. Bye-bye, honey.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope you were as inspired by Diane's fast in solidarity with the Guantanamo Bay strikers and everything she's done to really, you know, very courageously make the world a better place. And if most of us had half the courage and dedication commitment that Diane does, I think we would see this nation change very quickly. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, and he's also our contact with Community Progressive Radio. I'd like to thank my producer, Mikey, and Diane for being our guest, and especially you for listening and supporting the show. This is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.